Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. Today, we are going to review Atlanta United's 4-1 win against New England on Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It improved Atlanta United to 6-1-1 in its home openers. Of course, Yorgo Chakamakis was the hero of the game with 3 goals, his first hat trick in Major League Soccer and the 10th in franchise history. Thiago Almada added the other one. It was the first goal the team scored. It came on a penalty kick. Chakamakis came on a penalty kick, a header, and a volley from an acute angle, if my geometry lessons were correct back in high school at Pebblebrook back in the day. I believe that was an acute and not obtuse angle. You're going to hear from Gonzalo Pineda. You're going to hear from Chakamakis. You're going to hear from Almada. You're going to hear from Brad Guzan. I'm going to answer your questions about the MLS team. And I hope that you'll follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC or on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. I hope you'll consider subscribing to Southern Fried Soccer on Apple or Spotify, as well as to the paper. You can go to ajc.com/start for a really good deal to get all of your sports news about not only Atlanta United, but the Braves, Georgia, the Falcons, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, Kennesaw State, politics, food and dining, culture, local news. It's a pretty good deal. AJC.com/start. And of course, if this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over 4 decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
Now, before we get into the sound, let's go through some of the stats real quick. The stat provider that MLS uses this year, frankly, is not very good. So the stats aren't as robust as they were. They're not as complete. And in real time, they're not nearly as good. So I'm going to go with what they've got on the website, and we'll see if in a couple of days they come back and fix anything. Atlanta United had 21 shots to New England's 14, 9 shots on goal to New England's 5. New England completed more passes, but I don't really care about that too much. Brad Guzan had to make 3 saves. New England's goalkeeper had 5. Ravas had 5. Only 1 yellow card in the game, so I thought the referee overall did a really good job. We didn't know too much about him coming in. And Atlanta United finished with total team goals of 3.8, of course helped by 2 penalty kicks, to New England's 1.2. Carlos Heel, who I had written about earlier in the week, should be a focus for Atlanta United, scored the Revs goal around the 83rd minute. Consolation goal, not a good goal for Atlanta United to give up, and you're going to hear a little bit more about that in a second. Atlanta United struggled at the beginning of the game. They couldn't really keep possession. They couldn't really form any attacks. New England had them pinned in. So, and then around the 20th, 25th minute, sometime around there, Atlanta United figured things out, really put New England under a lot of pressure, got the tying goal from Almada. Just before halftime, a really heads-up play by Yorgo Chakamakis. He was the first to a ball that deflected off of, I think it was Matt Polster, and he and New England's goalkeeper went for it at the same time. Chakamakis got there first. The goalkeeper ran into him. For some reason, there was a penalty kick, but there was not a dogso red card against the goalkeeper. I was a little bit surprised by that. I was going to ask the referee about that after the game, but when the final result was done 4-1, it didn't really seem necessary at the time. But here's Pineda talking about the difference between the first 20 minutes and the last 70 of the game.
Well, I would say a couple technical errors. I don't want to give excuses to the players, but it's a new turf. It was kind of a little bit heavy, extra heavy. It's going to be fine. It's always the same process. actually, we're very happy and blessed that our owner decides to change the field every 2 years. That's fantastic for our players. But the first time, it always takes a little bit, so especially for Estia, for Bartek, the first couple passes, Derek. But after that, I think tactically we start to understand better also the positioning of certain movements, a couple coordinated movements to get the players in good positions. But the most important thing to me, change of pace. Once we break a couple lines, we were all four or five players running towards the ball, and then that brought the energy up. And then with the first goal, we kind of close out the half with in a positive mindset.
When we go to Atlanta United's trainings, usually on Tuesdays, we get to watch the whole session. On Thursdays, we get to watch the first 20 minutes or so, and then they start working on specific tactics. And it's not enough just to tell us don't film these. They send us back to the Alex Tambakis Memorial Media Trailer for a while, which is fine, I guess. It doesn't make sense to me, but it's not my team. But on Tuesdays, we see them working a lot on building out of the back, and it's something they worked a lot on in the preseason. If you watch the third goal, Atlanta United's third goal, it's a beautiful goal. The ball starts literally 5 yards from Atlanta United's inline. They break New England's pressure. A great pass by Derek Williams does that. And then Atlanta United is off to the races. I wanted to hear from Pineda, just his thoughts on what emotions he was experiencing, watching the team kind of execute something they've worked on for a long, long time. And actually, it turns out there was a couple of things they executed on that goal.
Yeah, I was telling my coaching staff in the first half that we were okay those first 20-25 minutes in transition, but not in the build-up. And then the second half, I think it started to be a little bit better until, you know, we scored the four goal and kind of we went down a little bit in the energy. Very happy, especially that third goal, as you said. It starts on the left, goes to the middle, breaking lines, go to the opposite side, 2v1 with Brooks and Saba running behind. And a special detail from the scouting report from Jose, our fantastic video analyst, and Rob and Diego and Eugenio about the type of crosses we needed today. And that was a big reward for us, for me collectively. It was exactly what we saw could have happened, and it happened. Not just the build-up, but the final third movement. I think it was pretty good. So I'm actually especially happy about that goal.
One of the things about Giakoumakis last year that I always found a bit amusing is when he'd have a good game, we would want to talk to him. Now, he's a player. His body is his asset. He would always go, he would do the shower, do the massage, do the treatment, do all those things, which is his right. And then he would come and talk to us, but it would put all of us way, way behind our work deadlines. Nothing we could do about it. Again, it's his right. It's not a complaint by me. It's more just this is how it is. But I think he's figured out if he just goes ahead and gets it done, then he can do all those things at his pace and maybe better. So we got to talk to him almost immediately after we got into the locker room last night. Here he is talking about which goal is his favorite.
The third one, I think.
It's the third obvious one?
Yeah, I think so.
Why?
Because I think the second one is one of my signature goals, the header. But the third one, it was something I don't do it pretty often, so I enjoyed it. And it was also the hat-trick. So right. I completed the hat-trick with this one.
And then here he is talking about his second goal, the team's third goal.
Yeah, it was a great play. It was one of the goals that we scored sometimes last year. Mm-hmm. And we tried to figure it out again, how we're going to do it, how we're going to progress the ball from defense to attack really fast and with nice play style. And I think it's about also in the end my connection with Brooks. And we proved last year that we have a good connection and he knows exactly where I'm going to be. So it was something that I was waiting for.
Thiago was next up. I was curious from him if he missed all of preseason because he was helping Argentina qualify for the Olympics. The Columbus game, at least the first half, he didn't seem like he was in sync with his teammates. So I was curious if he felt like he was in sync now with them after, again, missing all of the preseason. I don't know if he understood the question or if maybe he just decided to give this answer, but here it is.
Yeah, I was never out of rhythm because I was still training with the Argentina U23s. So I didn't miss any time, and yeah, I'm feeling good and in rhythm.
Brad Guzan was next. So when we get in the locker room, it's more of a talk to who you want to talk to if they want to talk. It can become kind of a pack thing, which I don't really like because then everybody gets the same quotes, and then you're just reading the same quotes and however whatever outlets you use to consume news about Atlanta United. I hope that mine is among the, or ours is among those. And then you also, you know, read the guys at Five Stripe Final and some of the others. But anyway, there's a pack around Brad Guzan, listened in. Here he is talking about the adjustments made in the second half.
I told Gigi he should have had about eight instead of three.
I said seven.
You know, listen, I've always said goals change games. And when you take your chances, it changes it, right? And, you know, we talked about it at halftime, going back out and starting the second half properly and making sure we didn't think, oh, we have this game in our back pocket. And, you know, I thought we did that. And when you create the chances that we did, you know, good things happen. And ultimately, we believe in those guys to take those chances and finish them. And we started to do that in the second half.
And here he is talking about the goal allowed late in the match.
Yeah, they catch us sleeping on a corner, you know. You know, those moments, like, yeah, okay, the game's probably over, right? You know, it's 4-0. But we need to be better in that moment. You know, they take the corner quick. We're late to get out to the first guy. We get out to him. We don't get close enough. He plays the pass inside of Carlos Gil, which we know what he's going to do. We don't get out to him. We don't do a good enough job of helping. I think it's Bartek that's you know, goal side of him. And ultimately, he finds the top corner. You know, it's, in those moments, we've got to be switched on and not complacent with what the score is saying for the game and continue to play the game in the right way.
Now, some of you may think that this is picking nits, but that switching off, particularly on set pieces, has been a problem for this team for a long, long time. We were talking about this after the game, and some people contend that a team can't maintain the focus for 90 minutes. I don't know if that's true or not. It may be what separates some players in Major League Soccer from those in the Premier League and La Liga and Bundesliga, the leagues that are considered the best in the world. I don't know. I wouldn't think it would be that difficult to do consistently, but some think it is. But anyway, the team switched off on that goal by New England. Now, had this been a 1-1 game, that could have been the deciding goal. And we saw this last year with Carlos Gil, almost the same situation. This was a corner kick, and I think last year's was a throw-in, but it could have been a game decider. There were a couple of instances in the first half when no one marked Gil. He was 22 yards from goal, got the ball turned, and could have made Atlanta United pay. It's those kind of moments that Atlanta United has all the talent in Major League Soccer. We were talking about this before the game. Taylor Twellman was sitting there, and we were going through ranking Atlanta United's rosters through the years as to which ones we think were best. I think this is third best of the eight, but that's not a knock on this roster. I think it's a very, very good roster. But it's this consistency, this 90-minute focus that they've got to show, you know, more consistently if they want to challenge for Supporters Shield and challenge for trophies, in my opinion. When we come back, I'm going to answer your questions. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
I'm Ernie Suggs.
And I'm Ned Ravone. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
As I hinted at the beginning of the podcast, we're excited to announce a great deal for a greater Atlanta here at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for just $1.99 per week for life. As long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's AJC.com/start to take advantage of the South's biggest deal. This is for new subscribers only. Before we get to the mailbag, I want to share a little personal anecdote. So some of you saw on Twitter, I had posted, I can't remember if it was earlier this week or last week, Doug Robertson, AJC. I was considering buying an e-bike and was looking for recommendations. One of the uses I would have for it is to go from my condo here in Midtown to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But I didn't remember ever seeing any bike racks at the stadium. I emailed a person who works at the stadium. They're like, we have the bike valet, but the bike valet doesn't do me any good because it opens after I get there and closes before I leave. And they weren't sure if the stadium had bike racks, which I found really odd considering the stadium loves to talk about its green certification and how good it is for the environment. You would think there would be more bike racks to encourage not using cars. But anyway, so, you know, the weather was bad on Friday. It was supposed to be bad on Saturday. And I was going to use Saturday to walk around the stadium and try to find a bike rack to see if I bought an e-bike, could I actually ride it to the stadium? So I walked, the weather cleared up. I walked to the stadium. I find a couple of good ones at the World Congress Center, ones that are kind of tucked away because if I spend the money on an e-bike, I don't want it to be vandalized or stolen or anything like that. So I want to make sure it's safe. I go down the escalator from the plaza up there, walking to gate one, which is where the media entrance is. And right beside the MARTA exit for Vine City, bam, there's a bike rack right there. Never noticed it before, never seen it before, but that made me happy. Took a photo, sent it to the gang that I do trivia with, and one of the guys, Tim, who also rides to the stadium, said, well, I'm going to start using that one. So anyway, that made me happy. So now I've just got to wait to see if the city of Atlanta is going to give me a rebate, one of those rebate programs that they're offering, if I qualify for it, and I'm going to get an e-bike. Also, it was great seeing my friend Richard and his family, seeing my friend Eric, who is co-authoring a book that I'm writing, a fiction book, seeing Dr. Fallis before the game. Appreciate all of y'all reaching out and asking to meet up. On to the mailbag. And this is a very good question by Kyle Coffee Sip. How much stock do I put into this win, considering the Revs had already lost to Toronto and DC and also came off a CONCACAF game on Wednesday? Yeah, I was remiss to not mention that in the pregame coverage that New England did have a midweek game. And this early in the season, a midweek game is going to negatively affect teams that also are playing on the weekend. It was an impressive win, I still think. Yeah, I mean, could New England have been better? Could they have been more fresh? Sure. But you can only play who's on the schedule. And New England was on the schedule. And Atlanta United did what it needed to do, scoring four goals, allowing that one at the end. You're going to have the same situation next week. Orlando is going to have a midweek game before they come to Mercedes-Benz on Sunday. They're going to be without Cartagena, who I think either got a red card or a yellow card suspension, which is going to be huge for Orlando, a huge loss for Orlando in that game next week. So that's something to look out for. You know, if you want to put an asterisk beside it, I guess it would be a small one, but I wouldn't fret about it too much or maybe put not enough stock. It was a good win by Atlanta United. And thank you for saying you appreciate the coverage, Kyle. On to Jamie, who says, not trying to be negative after a great win, but Atlanta struggled again in the first half with the buildup. There were times when a lot of United players seemed frustrated at the slow passing, especially Lennon. Is it just growing pains with a new six and two new CBs or something to worry about? Now, if you heard from Pineda in the audio, they were getting used to the new turf on the field. It was kind of the opposite of last year. Atlanta United would always start well, dominate the first 30 minutes, and then kind of lose control in the last 15 to the first half. This time it was a little bit of the opposite. We'll see what happens. You know, it happened against Columbus too. Atlanta United was just awful in the first half of that game. The players have said so. But Columbus has a way of doing that to people. Let's see what happens against Orlando on Sunday. Rob says, friend of the podcast, after only being awarded four PKs in 2023 and three PKs in 2022 versus 14 in 2018 and 10 in 2019 when the team lifted trophies, it was great to see the team awarded two penalty kicks last night. What do you make of the drastic discrepancy in PKs between our trophy lifting years and our struggle bus years? There's really, a really clear reason why. And that is because in 2018, 2019, you had Joseph Martinez really attacking the penalty box a lot. So he was creating fouls. You had Almiron in 18 attacking the box a lot and creating fouls. Yakimakis is going to start attacking the box. He probably should have gotten more PKs last year. Already won the one this year. The other one was a result of a cross by Jean da Silva hitting Nick Lima's arm. Frankly, I thought it was harsh, a very, very harsh penalty call. I don't know what Lima was supposed to do. He had his arm. It looked to me like he was putting it behind his back so that the ball wouldn't hit his arm, and it did. But there was no hesitation by the referee. I think Atlanta United is probably going to get a lot more PKs called this year simply because it is attacking the box a lot. It has a lot of players that are trying to get in on goal. In the struggle bus years, as you called it, you had some players that seemed more satisfied with getting fouled outside the box. That seemed to be, I don't know, their calling card, which eliminated the probability or the chance of Atlanta United getting penalty kicks. So that is among the reasons why. That, and it all kind of levels out over time. Dr. Fowlis comes in with a question. He, if you don't follow him on Facebook, it's P-E-T-O space F-A-L-L-A-S. He is a very talented photographer, and he has posted a lot of stuff he's taken from some journeys around the world. They're beautiful photographs. And I think he has a photo exhibit, maybe in McDonough. If you want to Google that, if you live in McDonough, I would do so. They're fantastic photographs. Anyway, he says, always wonderful to see a win, especially at home. It's not really a question, but more of a comment. Bartok Slice progressively got better as the game went on. I agree. I like to see his mentality of progressive passes. Same with Gregerson. Both acquisitions seem to want to move the ball forward up the field, and that is promising. I could be wrong as it is early, but we might have upgraded at both positions. I'm not sure if anyone disliked Mateus Uzetu more than Dr. Fowlis, but yes, I do believe that the team definitely upgraded at central midfield. Tristan and Bartok are going to be a formidable pairing this season. Steen, I don't want to say that Steen is an upgrade over Miles Robinson. Miles was coming off of Achilles. It takes, you know, a couple of years to get your confidence back, to get your quickness back, to get your instincts back. Miles wasn't as good as he was in previous years, but I still thought he was pretty decent last year. Steen had a great game, kind of a funny moment in the locker room with him afterward. We were listening to Brad. One of the comms guys turned to Steen, whose locker room is beside, or his locker is beside Brad's, and asked him if he wanted to talk. And Steen was like, I'm good. And the comms guy and I were both like, does that mean you want to talk or you don't want to talk? And he's like, I'm good. And we're like, we don't know what that means. And finally he said, no, I don't want to talk right now. But he was really good natured about it. But I did ask him, you know, did you have fun tonight? And he's like, oh yeah, it was a great time. Because this was the first games at Mercedes-Benz for guys like Bartok and Steen. And one of the Atlanta United supporters emailed me and asked if I would ask them on Tuesday about the experience of playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the first time. Frankly, I don't like asking that question. We're 8 years in. It's just the jaded journalist in me. I can understand why y'all would want me to ask that question. I quasi-fined Tyler Pilgrim 2 weeks ago in our kangaroo court because he asked about, are you excited? He asked somebody about, basically, are you excited to play in Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the first time? Which is a question that those of us who've covered the team for a while now always just kind of roll our eyes at because it seems more like a PR question. Anyway, that's just the jaded old journalist in me laughing at that. And we don't get to decide who we talk to on Tuesday. The team usually puts out an interview sheet and it's really whichever player feels like doing it that day. And so we have to tailor questions around that. We can ask to speak to specific people. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. So we'll see who we get on Tuesday. Adam is next. Did it feel to you like Atlanta could have scored 6 or 7 in that game? It sometimes felt like our decision-making or passing let us down in the final third. I know the team felt that was a statement win, and I agree. Scoring 4 is a sign of the danger we pose, but feeling like if we fully clicked, we could have scored more is very promising. After the Columbus game, I was critical of Slice and his turnovers. I'll have to rewatch this game so I can focus more, but from what my children allow me to watch live in the stadium, he had a much better game against New England. Thank you for your work and keep doing what you're doing. Well, thanks, Adam, and I thank the paper for allowing me to continue to do this. Yeah, I mean, Atlanta could have scored more. New England should have scored a couple more, at least in the first half, too. And, you know, the guys are still still getting in sync, still building chemistry. Interestingly, if y'all remember, it was New England that Atlanta United scored 7 against back in September of 2017. And we were kind of joking about that before the game as we were sitting around a table talking. Because I usually get there 2 hours before the game, so we got a lot of time to kill. So we talk about a lot of things. Joe Patrick and I were talking about the Falcons draft. That was another one of the topics that was covered yesterday. If teams scored every time they got in the final third and made good decisions every time they got in the final third, then to me, soccer would be pretty boring because the games would be like 50 to 45. It would become like what the NBA is now, which is no defense, no real, there's just no drama to me. So yeah, don't give up, Adam. And Bartok, I thought, had a really, really good game. As I said earlier, he and Tristan are going to be a formidable partnership in midfield. He's learning his teammates. They're learning him, learning sequences. It was his first time playing on what is a big, big field at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So you got to learn the angles, the sight lines, the spacing. But he had a great game. And I'm glad you had a good time with your kids. And then Caleb with our final question. What are your 3 favorite goals by the 5 stripes all time or in general? Caleb, you should have saved this and sent this in as a question for the new Wednesday feature we're doing about ranking things. And I've already gotten a lot of great questions for that. I look forward to, I haven't started writing it yet. I'll start writing it on Monday. This week's entry is going to be the best moves made by Atlanta United's front office all time. So I hope you'll look for that. It'll publish, I'm hoping, Wednesday morning. For the maybe the Thursday paper. And again, I want to encourage y'all, after you read it, email me your thoughts on what you think are the 5 best moves or your thoughts about my rankings. And I will read them on the podcast to preview Sunday's game against Orlando. You can find the content on AJC.com or on my Twitter. You'll find the link at Doug Robertson AJC. So my 3 favorite goals by the 5 stripes. These are in no particular order. And I might give you 4. Number 1, of course, has to be the first goal scored by Yamil Asad back at Bobby Dodd Stadium against Red Bulls. It was a good goal, but it was the first goal, so it's always going to go down in memory. Next would be Jeff Lorentowitz's goal in the Campeones Cup, the volley that bounced kind of off the back of a player, Club America player. I think that was Lorentowitz. I think he scored 2 goals with Atlanta United. It may have just been 1. It was a fantastic volley, fantastic goal. Next would be the Joseph Martinez goal, the first goal in the MLS Cup. It came from film study by Michael Parkhurst, who knew that the Portland player was going to turn a certain way, and he timed the tackle just right, came up the field a lot further than he usually is. Ball went to Joseph. Joseph scored 1-0. Off Atlanta United went to win its first MLS Cup. I like the goal because of the preparation. And then that brings us to another of my favorite goals, which was scored last night. It wasn't the volley that Giakoumakis did off the chest. It wasn't the 2 penalty kicks. It was the 3rd goal because the build-up play, I hope you, if you weren't there live or if you rewatched the games or if you just want to see the highlight on MLSsoccer.com, go and find it and watch it. It's fantastic build-up play. It's patient. It's smart. Nobody panicked. Every pass was inch perfect. And then you get the cross from Lennon to the back post, which was something that, as you heard Pineda talk about, Atlanta United studied. They knew that was going to be there. Lennon hit a perfect cross. Giakoumakis with a header that I wrote in the story was hit with enough force that it could create the new foundation for the next mid-rise in the Gulch. Because there's a lot of building happening there now. Anyway, Caleb, thank you for the question. Thank y'all for all of your questions. Thank you for listening and subscribing. A reminder to tell your friends about our show and give us a rating and a review on Spotify and Apple. That's what helps us grow the podcast. We'll come back next Friday. Availability for the players is Tuesday and Friday next week because the game is on Sunday. So please look for the next Southern Fried Soccer podcast then. As always, hug your loved ones, communicate with your loved ones. Practice empathy, strive for awareness. Thanks for listening to Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.